You have downloaded the ESPNU Lacrosse Podcast.
What to watch for.
He can attack the goal from all different angles, whether it's an alley dodge righty, a split to his left. He can invert. He can pass. They protect the paint. They pack it in as good as anyone in the nation. He fills the goal up. Ground balls will determine possessions and ultimately the winner of this game.
Sounds very simple, and it is.
The ESPNU Lacrosse Podcast.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the ESPNU Lacrosse Podcast. I'm Quinn Kesnick. Glad to have you along for the ride. It's quarterfinal weekend. A pair of games on Saturday from College Park. Two more on Sunday, Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. This is a two-part podcast. Part one will focus on the Saturday games. Part two will focus on the Sunday games. You can find both podcasts on IL.com. That's InsideLacrosse.com, iTunes, and ESPNRadio.com. Enjoy the podcast. Get it out there on Facebook and Twitter to your friends.
Saturday, first game on ESPN2, Cornell and Ohio State from Byrd Stadium, College Park, 12:30 faceoff on ESPN2. We welcome in Steve Mock, number 6 for Cornell, senior from Huntington, New York. Steve, first of all, congratulations on this year and your career. How would you best describe this senior campaign?
Quinn, thanks for having me. The senior campaign it's been a long year, but a great year. We got a big senior class, 16 seniors, adding Robin to the mix this year. It's been a long ride, but, you know, we're very proud of what we've done so far, but, you know, we're not done yet. We got a lot of work to do still. Ohio State this weekend is a huge game for us. Great team in Ohio State. And we just couldn't be more excited for this opportunity to go back down to Byrd Stadium.
Steve, I want to put you on the timeline, and I want to start when you first started playing lacrosse, and we'll bring it up to right now. Are you a product of that great Huntington Youth League program?
Growing up, I played for the Huntington. It was actually Huntington Cold Spring Harbor Youth League program when I was playing. Now it's two separate programs down there now. But, I grew up playing there in around first, second grade. My father was my coach, you know, all through PAL leagues there. And I just grew up loving the game. And then I moved on to, Huntington Public Schools, and I played with some great players, in high school in Huntington. Learned from some great players, the Bratton Twins, Zach Howe, Scott Kosis, guys like that. And then moving here to Cornell, I played with, some other amazing players as well.
Yeah, Coach DeLuca always points out that you are not like an inside finishing attackman in high school. He always says that you were the quarterback, you're the distributor. How did that change? Was that just like all of a sudden they realized that, hey, this guy's pretty good inside? Or did you realize, well, if I want to get some playing time, I've got to change my role? Kind of, how did that evolution of your role change?
Yeah, you know, it kind of just worked out when I got here. Me and Rob, from when I stepped on campus, we had a little bond together. You know, he hosted me on my recruiting visit, and we were always close starting out here at Cornell. And, whenever we played together, he always had a knack for finding me inside or around the goal. And, you know, we just played off that, and we've, developed a lot since then. And I think, yeah, you know, coming out of high school, I was more of a quarterback role. And I think that's part of the reason why I've been able to be so effective. I know what Rob's going to do and other Dodgers. So I've been on that side of the ball before, so I know what they're looking for, and I know what I need to do with my role now that I currently have.
Take me back to last week. The one thing that stood out to me, you had two teams who early on in the year obviously were high ranked. They had a couple late season losses. I thought you guys had the right approach, though. You know, you didn't complain about the seeding. You just went about your business, showed up, and played extremely hard. You played a clean game. Everybody contributed, and you advance. In an era and a day and age where it seems like athletes are always coming up with excuses, you guys made none.
Yeah, you know, Coach DeLuca stressed that Sunday night when we found out we were going to play Maryland. No excuses. And we knew we were going to have to play, you know, the best teams. It's the NCAA tournament. You're going to play the best teams at some point. And, you know, why not the first round? And you started off with a bang. So, that was something that Coach DeLuca stressed early on. And we rode that all week. We had a great week of practice, worked extremely hard all week. And, we were fortunate to have a great game on Sunday.
We'll finish up with a couple questions about Ohio State. When I watched them, you see that 3-3 zone where they'll put a shorty on the crease and a shorty top center. just you don't have to give me your secrets, but you're breaking down film this week, kind of just studying the rotations and the soft spots. You know, what's that like for you as you prep to attack a 3-3 zone like that?
Yeah, definitely. We're looking at their zone and we're looking at their man-to-man as well. But you know, I'm not going to say too much, but you know, we're going to do what we've done all season, and we're not going to change too much. You know, it's late in the season. We've had pretty good success all year, so we're not going to change much of what we do. You know, run our stuff. Coach Kerwick is really confident in us and our abilities to run the plays and you know the sets that he puts in for us. But yeah, their zone. You know, it's like other zones that we've seen before. So yeah, we're just going to continue what we do.
Done with school?
One paper left.
On what?
Green marketing, actually. It's a marketing class. I'm just finishing up that tonight, actually. But fortunate this semester, I had no finals.
So
just one paper.
Oh, nice. So as of tomorrow, you're all signed, sealed, and delivered full-time lacrosse?
Yes, full-time lacrosse after
how
after tomorrow.
I always thought it was interesting, you know, when your academic responsibilities kind of go away during the playoffs, how do you find your guys keeping themselves busy away from lacrosse? What are some things you guys like to do?
I don't know. I mean, a lot of guys have just been doing extra work, extra shooting, lifting. A bunch of guys got a few extra lifts in last week. You know, doing stuff for lacrosse, watching film. It's really great to watch. Guys are you know, fully bought in. They're not, you know, just distracted by anything social or anything like that. Everyone's bought into this team here and our goal this year, and it's really just great to watch.
Well, Steve, have a great week of preparation. We'll see you at 12:30 on ESPN2. It's Cornell and Ohio State. Best of luck and continued success. Saturday on ESPN2, we'll kick things off. It's Cornell and Ohio State from College Park. We welcome in Ohio State assistant coach Dave Dobbins. Coach, first of all, congratulations on the regular season and the playoff win against Towson last week. What was the most significant takeaway in terms of your responsibilities and your half of the field in that Towson win?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on, Quinn. I appreciate it. We're really proud of the guys' effort, you know, all year, really, that they put in. And it's certainly a team effort, you know, in that win. And as we talk about every week with our guys, that it's 60 minutes of our whole team. We won the possession battle, and that's a big part of us putting points on the board. So it's a lot of attribution to, you know, our face-off guys and what we did there at the face-off decks and our defense, you know, coming up with ground balls and one-stops and loose balls and getting the ball down to our end. So,
what's the biggest challenge that Cornell is going to present?
They're a great team, top to bottom. You know, they got a great face-off guy. They got a very dangerous offense, you know, one of the best offenses in the country statistically, a fantastic attack unit, and a great defense as well. They come out, they pressure you. You know, they got a good close defense, good, you know, short stick D-middies. So they call it, they're just a solid all-around team, all around the field. So we got to have a great week of preparation. Looking forward to a great practice here in about 45 minutes with the guys. So,
where are you guys right now academically, Coach? You done? Kids in finals? what's the week like?
We finished up. So our guys are full-time lacrosse players right now, which is great. We had a great year academically. We finished as a team over a 3.0 for our team GPA. So really proud of the efforts that the guys put in there. But it's nice for them that they were able to put that behind them. Even last week we were off as well. We finished up early. So their only focus right now is on lacrosse and on the task at hand ahead of us this weekend with Cornell.
You guys ride a nice little win streak into this quarterfinal game. What in the second half of the season, and then the ECAC tournament, and now in the NCAA tournament, kind of what was the area or areas that you guys have seen a significant ramp up or improvement in? You know, kind of what's taken this program now kind of over the top and from good to great?
Yeah, I mean, part of it is the senior leadership we have. You know, those guys that we have right now is senior leaders. They've really been, you know, leaders since they arrived here on campus. It's a great class. And every year we feel like we've gotten closer and closer, you know, to our goal, which is, you know, winning a conference championship, making the NCAA tournament, and making a run to Memorial Day weekend. And these guys this year, you know, they kind of set their mind to it and said, you know, we're sick of being close because we felt like we have been for the past few years. They've taken the bull by the horns and they've really taken this team and led them really on the field, off the field. Everything they've done has been with that, you know, final goal in mind. I really attribute it to them, the seniors that we have. They've done a fantastic job leading this team.
I love that, Coach. Sick of being close. Speaking of seniors, Logan Schuss, what's most important when fans watch him play on Saturday on ESPN2 and Eamon, myself, and Paul talk about him? What's most important that we translate to the fans about his game and the type of athlete that he is?
Well, he's a special player, and he's, you know, one of those leaders that we attribute our success to as well. He's a big part of our program, you know, as a captain, him and Dominique Alexander. So that's where the leadership starts. But, you know, on the field, he's a special player. You know, he's targeted as a Canadian lefty, but I think one of the things people don't know is if you watch him play, he's got a pretty good right hand for a lefty Canadian. He can burn you there, and a lot of teams don't recognize that, I think. And is just the ability to shoot the ball. He's got an unbelievable release. You know, one of the best shooting releases that I've certainly ever coached and ever seen. You know, and he's got great feeding ability as well. So he's that all around player. He can dodge, he can feed, he can shoot. He's got fantastic game sense as well. So.
Awesome. Coach Stobbins, thank you very much. Give my best to head coach Nick Myers and that other Meyer coach out there, Coach Urban Meyer.
You got it.
Have a great
weekend.
You
got it. No problem.
And we'll see you at College Park.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Quinn.
ESPNU podcast welcomes in Inside Lacrosse Managing Editor, I believe is your latest title, Terry Foy. Let's take a look at the Saturday games. Before we do, though, any national news or notes that are relevant right now as we head towards the quarterfinals?
Well, I would think that, you know, at this time of year, there are a couple of things that you tend to focus on. One is coaching changes, and I think that to date, everything's been pretty quiet. I remember 2 years ago when we saw Richie Mead out at Navy and Tony Seaman out at Towson. There's a lot more activity in that realm going on right around, you know, the week after the first round of the tournament, the week before the first round of the tournament, excuse me, and so on. So things have been pretty quiet there, and I do expect that to kind of remain the status quo because so many of the programs that had rough years this year were under new leadership, coaches that haven't necessarily had enough time to make the decisions that ultimately give athletic directors kind of a feeling that they can make that decision to let them go or go in a different direction. Another thing that I think we're paying attention to is conference realignment. I think that there's a feeling among a lot of college administrators that there is at least a settling of the major college realignment. So some of the associate and affiliate memberships that will fill out some of these conferences, particularly as going forward, there's some AQ fluctuation in terms of that magic number between 5, 6, and 7 teams, needing six teams in order to have an AQ. I think that we're going to see potentially a Big East associate member come down the line in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And then obviously Johns Hopkins with their, you know, committee exploring conference membership, that will come to fruition probably by, you know, quarterfinal weekend. So, you know, there will be news there as well.
Any update in terms of next year's NCAA tournament with 10 potential automatic qualifiers?
That will be a decision that will be made in June. So, we've known for a while that the likelihood is that the ASUN and the ACC will be granted automatic qualifiers, which will raise the level to 10, at which point, once that's done, in conjunction with those decisions, a decision will be made as to whether or not you want to pursue a play-in game, or two play-in games, rather, for probably the lowest 4 RPI-rated conferences, or expand the bracket to 20 teams, which at this point seems pretty unlikely.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially given the fact that first-round attendance has been so poor. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat this. Our TV ratings for the first round were pretty good. Attendance really can't be happy with it. The games get no marketing on a national level. They get no marketing on a local level. And that's why you average around, 1,500, 1,700 fans.
And I think that one of the things that could be explored in conjunction with this is an option to pod the first-round games, which I'm kind of in favor of. I understand the value of the highest 8 seeds, particularly because you don't actually purely seed the bracket, having the advantage of a home game. But if it's to the detriment of, you know, maybe a couple thousand fans not going to games that otherwise would, I don't know how well you
can justify
the
It's friends and family. They're going to make the trip only. So right now in our first-round games, it's friends and family only. Other than that game in Denver this week, that's what I saw. They're going to make any trip that you ask them to make. So I see no negatives with making first-round pods. And I'd go to non hotbed areas, places like Atlanta, Seattle, St. Louis, Chicago, Louisville, Kentucky. I'd experiment, and I'd hope to get 5,000 to 10,000 fans.
Well, and the problem with experimentation is the risk associated with it. And when you look at that, I mean, you're just adding flights and you're adding expense. And, you know, we talked last week on your podcast about how expensive flights are, particularly on a 1 week notice to send a college lacrosse team anywhere. If you can do it in locations like Hofstra, College Park, Princeton, then, you know, you're driving and potentially, you know, we've seen the NCAA use early round games as or early round opportunities to test out venues for, you know, possible championship weekend venues later. You know, it would make sense to use first round venues as opportunities for quarterfinal venues in the inverse as well.
Good point. Good point. And some of those soccer stadiums, whether it's, you know, the Columbus Crew or the place that Red Bull Stadium up in New York would be ideal from a size standpoint. We know PPL is a great venue. All right, let's look ahead. We got quarterfinal action on Saturday from Bird Stadium, 12:30. Game's on TV. You can follow all the pregame materials here on InsideLacrosse.com. Cornell at Ohio State. The way I see things, this Ohio State team is dangerous on offense. Jesse King, Logan Shuss, Dominique Alexander in transition. They do some really, really smart things. I think Nick Myers has done a wonderful job gearing his offense to the talent he has. Defense, they're good. They're a lot better than people realize. Joe Moore, Darius Bowling, Robbie Hawes. There's some talent there. They're gonna have to mix and match man and zone and maybe junk it up a little against Rob Pinnell. I'm not convinced that this is a great defensive matchup for the Buckeyes.
Well, when it comes down to the defensive matchup, it isn't insofar as there isn't one guy that you feel comfortable putting on Rob Pinnell and letting him cover for the course of the game. But the fact of the matter is that while we argued about who was going to cover Rob Pinnell out of Maryland last week, they ended up trying two guys on him, and they, you know, didn't really try Mike Earhart really at all, which is the guy that you thought they were going to cover him, and maybe they should have. But ultimately, I think that's probably the only way that you can really approach Rob Pinnell. You need to throw multiple looks at him.
Yeah.
Offensively, you want to keep them on their heels a little bit, not really knowing what they're going to be able to expect next. And I think that Ohio State is well-suited to do that because for two reasons. Number one, they're a team that uses multiple looks defensively throughout the course of a game regularly. They've done that a lot over the course of the season. And number two, I think Greg Dutton has matured so well, and his communication with Nick Myers has advanced to the point where Coach Myers feels comfortable letting Greg make decisions both on the field and then talking to him and trust his feedback in huddles, in breaks, and making decisions based off of that feedback. So if they think something's working well or if they think that something they haven't done would work well, I don't think that they're going to be shy to pull the trigger, and that could be a big difference in this game.
Yeah, I see the Buckeyes having to play some zone, and they played a ton against Towson. They have to press out on Rob Pinnell, though, in the zone. I don't think he can let him set his feet and have his eyes free. And you got to face guard Steve Mock, who was a guest on this podcast. Then it'll come down to Max Van Burgundian, Connor Busick, and Connor English making wing shots and mid-range to outside shots. And I think if you're the Buckeyes, that's a deal you're willing to take.
Yeah, and ultimately that's a recipe for a good game, particularly if those outside shots can lead to transition the other way. You know, Ohio State is a team that can be very chameleonish in terms of whether or not they take advantage of transition in early offense. But that's one of the other things that Ohio State's going to have to deal with defensively. Cornell has been very good in their early offense over the course of the last couple weeks particularly. And, you know, it's something that Ohio State is relatively well familiar with. Talking with Nick Myers this morning, one of the things that he mentioned was how similar in a lot of ways preparing for Loyola is to preparing for Cornell, because Justin Ward is a similar type of Dodger as Rob Pinnell, and they value early offense similarly. So it's, you know, they've played Ohio State has played Loyola twice this year, so I think that in that regard, they feel a little bit comfortable preparing for Cornell.
And how do the Buckeyes react to Cornell on the ground? Because I'm really impressed with Cornell as a hustling ground ball team. Okay, game two, 3 o'clock, Bird Stadium, Saturday, I believe it's ESPN2, Syracuse and Yale. Interesting matchup. You know, I think Yale has a lot of the component parts to make a run into this tournament, from faceoffs to defense to leadership to timely goal scoring. They're a battle-tested team. This could be a dangerous matchup for the Orange.
I agree, and I think that the reason I feel strongly that that's the case is because, to me, they're a little bit of a better Bulldogs type situation. A lot of the things that Bryant does well and is able to do well are things that Yale does just a little bit better. And so, you know, I haven't gotten an opportunity to look at the Penn State-Yale game closely, but Yale-Princeton Ivy League championship is burned into my mind in terms of what Yale was able to do. Winning faceoffs, they were able to have multiple looks offensively, and defensively, they knew how they were going to try to approach and stop the knowns. And I think that there are some aspects of what Princeton does offensively that are similar to what Syracuse does offensively insofar as they like to initiate with Marasco, similarly to how Tom Shriver can initiate. You know, obviously Shriver's a more dangerous shooter and goal scorer, but I think that when you deal with a midfield initiator, you kind of familiarize yourself with how you want to approach that. And also, I think that, you know, with their finishers, Syracuse's finishers, particularly guys like Rice and Barber, you know, it's kind of similar to, you know, how Fricaro was playing, how McDonald was playing at points throughout the season. And I thought that I thought that Yale did such a good job against Princeton defensively because they were able to take away the knowns, press out, and cover them all over the field. And I feel like they're going to be able to do something similar to that against Syracuse. So if they dominate possession the way they did in the second half against Penn State and the way that they did against Princeton, and similar to how Bryant was able to do at times against Syracuse, it could be a recipe that ultimately is what's needed to beat the Orange this year.
I'm very interested to see what Yale's defensive slide mentality will be. I'm convinced that Syracuse is not a team that you want to overly slide to. I think you create offense for them. They're a terrific passing team. I'm slow to go. Schoonmaker and Loy are going to have to score on assisted goals to beat me. And I'm going to take Cometti and a bunch of the Rugrat attackmen out of the equation because I don't think they can beat me one-on-one. Terry, last thing. What can fans look forward to late this week from InsideLacrosse.com as you get ready for the quarterfinals?
Well, we're going to be bringing you features all week, and I'm working on two, actually, that are both for the Saturday games. You know, like I mentioned, I talked to Nick Meyer this morning, and I'm writing a story about how I expect Ohio State to defend Cornell. Going to touch a little bit on the 2008 matchup and some of the similarities between that 2008 Ohio State team and this 2008 Ohio State team. And then we'll be talking about Yale in the way that their coaching staff has gotten better over the course of the last 4 or 5 years. The program has improved as a result of that. And I think that I'm excited about this story because I like the way that, you know, I feel like coaches getting better is an undeveloped or undersold storyline in sports media. And so, you know, really thankful for Andy Shea and his staff to be able to talk to me and talk about the things that they've done to improve. Like always, they're going to be anonymous scouting reports and certainly coverage all weekend long from the both event sites.
You know how much I love those anonymous scouting reports. Sign your work!
Saturday, 3 o'clock, Syracuse and Yale on ESPN2. It's the NCAA quarterfinals. We welcome in JoJo Marasco, midfielder, Syracuse University, Tuareton finalist. Mr. Assister this year, JoJo. How would you best describe the season you've been able to put together?
Yeah, you know, we have a great defense that's able to get us the ball a lot, and I got a great midfield line with Scott Loy and Luke Cometti, and, you know, it kind of complements our team where, you know, I'm usually the dodger, and I can roll back and feed these guys, and they put the ball in the back of the net, and it's helped me, and you guys given me a great nickname, Mr. Assister. It's pretty funny.
When do you think the light bulb came on for this team? You know, last year you guys struggled. The offense was not moving like it is right now. When do you think you guys kind of looked around and said, hey, this could be pretty special?
Yeah, you know, we know we have a lot of guys on our team that are very talented. And this year, Coach Donahue made more of a move to the offense working with us. And he dialed in our offense very well. And it helps us that where we can complement each other and you got some great tackmen that are very smart with the ball, and Dylan Donahue and Billy Ward and Maltz and, you know, Kevin. They're playing so great and making great decisions, and it helps us with the midfield because, you know, we're able to dodge and we trust these guys, and it shows us that's why we're playing so well right now.
You guys beat Bryant on Sunday night. Fell behind early. What was it like when you look up at the scoreboard and see you know, you're down 3 and 4 goals early?
Yeah, you know, it's tough being on the sideline where we practice all week on this face-off guy who's a great face-off guy in Massa, and on the sidelines 4-0, and, you know, the whole time we knew that we were going to get the ball and we were going to be able to score, and we're playing with so much confidence right now, and but it was tough, you know, seeing those guys come out and score 2 goals in the first 30 seconds. We were just sitting on the sideline like, what is going on? We practiced all week. Then we finally got the ball, and Luke scored one to make it 4-1. We knew from there we were going to start rolling, and it worked out finally.
Where are you right now, JoJo, in terms of academics? Are you done? Are you in finals? Where are you right now?
I finished up my academic. I finished my last semester of classes, but it's so tough senior year. And I'm in the School of Education for physical education, and I have to do an extra semester of student teachings, but it'll be nice because, you know, I'll finish up this year in lacrosse, and then I'll have a whole semester just, you know, focusing on my academics to finish up my semester in student teaching.
But you're good for this semester. So now it's just your focus is strictly lacrosse this week?
Yeah, we had no finals. Finals were done last week. Graduation was done actually Sunday, so that's why we had the game at 7:30. It was brutal, but it was nice to finally, you know, everyone graduated, all the seniors, and we're just straight focusing on Yale.
Beautiful. When you start looking at Yale tape, anything in particular stand out about the way they play defense?
Yeah, you know, they're a very talented team all around. Great face-off, great offense, great defense. And, you know, they got a great pull in Mike McCormick. And, you know, we're going to have to really focus on playing smart. They like to throw a lot of checks. And we watched a lot of film yesterday. And I think we're going to have a great week of practice, really have a great game plan. I think our coaches are ready for them. And they're going to dial us in. And we're going to be real focused for them.
All right, your toe drag goal the other day. If I was doing that game, I would have said that you took a bath in WD-40 and slipped through the defense. How do you best describe that goal? It was unbelievable.
Yeah, you know what? It was a pretty lucky play, but you know, I'm not a big zone buster with shooting because you know I'm more of a closer guy to shoot. And I stepped in. I felt like I was comfortable, and all of a sudden the two guys came on me real quick. I tried to make a quick move and you know take a great shot. I think I definitely you know probably learned one of those. One of the books from the Canadians. I watched too much of Westberg dominate the night before against Albany.
Hey, what's the name of the spot that we had lunch up in Cuse at the great pasta place, your favorite pregame meal place? What's the name of that spot?
Oh, yeah, that place was awesome. Possibilities. It's been on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives and all those places, all those food sites. Yeah, Possibilities downtown in Syracuse.
You get some carryout for you know, you take that on the road with you?
Yeah, we go down there all the time. It's such a great food spot, and you know, just even that the lunch is great too. It's you know, it's quick, it's easy, and it's cheap, and you know, it was fun.
What gets you most excited this week, JoJo? When you think about a quarterfinal game and what's at stake, and you know, taking this team on the road for this game, what most excites you about this week?
Yeah, we're real excited. We're going down Thursday, so we'll be down there early, and we have the opportunity to play against a great Yale team on national television again, which is very exciting. We're going down and playing Maryland, which is, you know, I got the new turf field. We're excited about that. And, you know, just the fact that it's the quarterfinals, we're real excited, and we can't wait to get down there. We're already, yesterday, at practice, the guys were so motivated and having so much fun at practice. It just makes us, you know, the confidence we're playing with right now is just awesome, and we can't wait to get down there and play against Yale.
Can't wait to see you, JoJo. Saturday, second game, College Park, Bird Stadium at Syracuse and Yale on ESPN2 at 3 o'clock. JoJo, have a great week, and we'll see you down where they got that big turtle at the end of the field.
Hey, Quinn, thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Saturday, Bird Stadium, 3 o'clock at Syracuse and Yale, NCAA quarterfinals. On ESPN2, we welcome in Yale head coach Andy Shea. Coach, first of all, congratulations on your first round win at Penn State. I got to ask you, what was the tenor of halftime when you go in there down 5-1? You know, watching that game, I know Dylan Levings had some face-off issues with the violations, but how did you,
right,
or how did your players really change the complexion of that game?
Well, you know, I think that the thing about that face-off rule is Dylan violates the first two. It's almost like he's not even facing off in the first half. So we kind of, it's very difficult for him to be aggressive, you know, in that first half. So we knew we were going to reset that, and we thought we were going to get a much better performance out of him in the second half. But the other thing is we challenged a couple guys individually, to play a lot better. Felt like some guys were in the wrong place at the wrong time and you know, I think they kind of shook off the first half and came out in the second half as, you know, a much different team. I also think Mike McCormack, our senior and captain and leader, you know, got after guys a little bit in the locker room, and I think they responded to him as well.
You know, it's one of those situations, Coach, as an ex-player where I've been in that spot where you kind of look around and say, you know what, this is not about winning and losing. We just got to play better. And I can deal with losing, but I can't deal with not trying hard and not playing well.
Right, right. And I think that's something that we've been in this situation. I haven't quite looked at it. Somebody probably has, but I would say more than 10 times this season we've been down two or three goals to start the game. So they really they know they can come back and they respond, and they've done it over and over, and you know, people that watch the game, the fans continually complain, but that's the way they play. So
let's spin things forward, Coach. You talked about McCormick. I thought he, you know, he jumped off the screen in terms of his playmaking. 5'9", 180, West Islip kid. He's just everywhere. He's a scrapper. What stands out about his time for you at Yale?
The thing about Michael is he has not wasted a day on this campus. He's appreciated the opportunity to be here, both as a student and as an athlete. I can't think of a practice where he hasn't shown up with a smile on his face. You know, he's played every minute since he's been here. He's done everything we've asked him to do. And I would say that second half against Penn State was maybe his best performance to date. I thought he was unbelievable. He was all over the field. And you know, I think that you look at that performance and the thought that maybe his career was going to end, and he didn't want it to end that day. And I think you saw that in all the ground balls and caused turnovers. And he had a hockey assist and assist. He was, you know, without him, you know, we're not winning that game. That's for sure. But he's a tremendous leader. He's a tremendous, player, a tremendous person. I really can't say enough about him.
When you start to look at Syracuse, what are some of the key issues? What are some of the key areas that you know, you're going to be focused on that can make the difference in this ball game?
Well, I think the first thing that I look at is they are terrifyingly unselfish. You know, in years past, Syracuse has, and I don't think there's any shortage of star power, but they, you know, if you can shut down 22, then, you know, another guy's more than likely, or for them this year, had it stepped up. So for us, we can't keep our eye on a handful of guys. I think there's a number of guys that step up at different times. And that's a lot like us. We've been kind of in a similar situation on the offensive end. But I'm amazed at how unselfish they are. They're really it's a very impressive team to watch. They work well together. And watching them from the beginning of the season to now, they've gotten better, you know, every single game. It's very, very impressive to watch.
Are you in an era of micromanaging, Coach? Where do you kind of think you fit as a guy? Are you absolute details in your scouting report, or do you stick to more coaching your guys and focusing on your guys?
Yeah, no, I used to be a detailed guy with the scouting for sure. I looking back, I've had 18-page scouting reports. As I've gotten older, I've realized, hey, I don't want to put those together anymore. And be these kids, they don't want to go over all that stuff. You know, the coach sometimes, maybe you're just doing it for your own comfort level. So nowadays I'm more, you know, less is more. I would say, I think that I give the guys a couple cues and you know, a couple of things to look for as far as their matchup is concerned. But by and large, if we bog them down with too much information, then they're not going to play as well as they possibly can. So you're always kind of walking that line. You want to strike a balance between preparing enough and not, you know, creating paralysis by analysis with your kids.
What type of mindset do you want your kids to have, Coach, when they step on the field 3 o'clock on Saturday?
Well, we've talked about it, and I think that the biggest thing for us is the thing that we keep saying is everything surrounding the potential what happens after this game is something we want to ignore. You know, and for us, we've been saying we've got a game on Saturday, and it's against Syracuse. And we're not talking about the seeding, the ranking. We're not talking about our seeding, our ranking. We're not talking about what happens if we win. We're just saying that we've got a game against Syracuse. It's a new opponent for us in the last few years, and we're excited to play. We're excited that we get another week together. So we're just trying to keep it as basic as possible. It's kind of what we've been doing up to this point. It's what we did in the Ivy League tournament. It's what we did against Penn State. It's just like, hey, we got another game. We got another week together. And, you know, we hope that tact is going to work for us.
Coach, continued success. Appreciate your time this morning. Enjoy your week, and we'll see you Saturday at Byrd Stadium.
Thanks, Clint.
I hope you enjoyed this version of the ESPNU Lacrosse podcast. This was part one. You can log on to InsideLacrosse.com, iTunes, or ESPNRadio.com for the Sunday edition. So I'll be heading down to Reagan National Airport, catching a late flight from Washington, D.C. to Indianapolis for the Sunday quarterfinals of Paragame from Lucas Oil Stadium.
Thanks for downloading the ESPNU Lacrosse Podcast. For more great shows, be sure to check out the Pod Center page at ESPNRadio.com.